This is Morgan Michael, welcoming you to Kindsight 101, the podcast, where you'll hear from world-renowned educational leaders about the mobilizing power of kindness, together by challenging our assumptions and venturing beyond the status quo in education. We can make a big impact, one small act at a time.
So teachers, do this experiment in your classroom. This is the most powerful thing I think that we can do for the people in our lives around us is ask them, what do you believe about yourself? Go ahead and ask them if it's true. Go right into the next question of who would you be if you stopped believing that thing? We need to be childlike again and let ourselves play with the idea of who we could be.
In my interview with Sharon Hughes, author of Girl in the Garage and amazing podcaster, we discuss all sorts of things, including her three-step process for reimagining your life. She's amazing, and she talks about the power of coming into your own by challenging the narratives that you tell about your life, giving up the masks that don't serve you anymore, talking about choosing the people that you follow on social media and feeding your mind with powerful and very positive messaging, as opposed to letting life just happen to you. We are the authors of our lives. We get to program what comes into our life and what doesn't. So it's important to be choosing that as we go about our day. She also gives us a really helpful tip that we can use every single morning, and all you need is your phone. And she gives us some really important questions in terms of rethinking our limiting beliefs. Now, limiting beliefs have always been sort of perplexing to people. And so she breaks it down, and it's super easy. Actually, as a bonus, it's a super awesome activity that you can use with your students, especially later elementary or even middle school. So I urge you to listen to this with a mind wide open and to learn from our amazing guest, Sharon Hughes. So Sharon Hughes, I am so excited to have you today on Kindsight 101. It is so exciting for me, and I have been anticipating and looking forward to this interview for quite some time. I've been following you on Instagram. I know your book just came out, Girl in the Garage, and you are just lighting up the world right now. So thrilled to have you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. So I do want to get started right away. Before we get into some of the practical and tangible ways of creating the life that we want and making decisions and doing all of those kinds of things in terms of creating the life that we want to be living, I want to dive a little bit into your background. So in your book, oh my, you outlined some really difficult things that happened in your background. You've had experience with being raped at a very young age, abducted, abandoned as a child, and left homeless as a minor. So, I mean, in terms of ACEs scores, because we think about it in that respect in education, you were off the scale. I mean, right there, you had so many factors kind of working against you. And, you know, later in life, you fell into a series of really difficult relationships and cycles and marriages. And so I guess my question to you in relation to that very challenging past is, how is it that those cycles of pain often become normalized? And I know you say that like normal is a setting on a dryer, but it's not actually reality. What do you think about sort of the story that we tell ourselves when we've been through that kind of trauma?
That is a really good question. Well, there's so many layers to that because for one thing, like you outlined what I went through, I didn't know any different. So that was my normal just because there wasn't anything to compare it to. If I went to somebody else's house, there was... It's kind of hard to even compare it to that because if I was a kid and I went to somebody else's house and things were calm, I had aspects of calm when I went home too, but there was a lot of chaos and disorder. So it really wasn't until I was much older that I realized that how I was raised really wasn't common or normal But then, like, and this doesn't even make sense, as I've written the book and spoken out about these things, I've found out it's the normal for so many people. So many people say to me, oh my gosh, your story is my story. So when we talk about normals, what the sense of it is, like Webster's dictionary sense of normal, that's not normal. Mm-hmm. I almost feel like this is such a play on words, but it really is you were probably raised completely different from me, completely different from, you know, the people that live down the block from you. And it's because people bring their stuff with them. You grow up, you have children, you have careers and things like that, and you've got all that stuff with you that you haven't dealt with. You don't know any better. So one of the points that I want to make on that note is we tend to say from kind of more of a judgment place, well, why didn't they know better? You know, what were they thinking? Mm-hmm. They didn't know better. That was their thinking, because actually that's their normal. And that's the story that they've lived in. And a lot of times these stories are patterns that are passed generationally. So like the example, since you read my book, I talk about my mother and I share her story. She's kind of a case study in there. And it's like, well, she carried that pattern with her into parenting, and then it gets passed down. I hope that makes more sense.
Oh, I think it does. I think, yeah, it absolutely does. And I think when you think about it as a story that we perpetuate, mm-hmm. that it really takes being intentional and aware, self-aware, and having an element of self-compassion to halt the story and to mm-hmm. recreate it. And I know that that is one of the biggest gifts that you're bringing to the world, Sharon, because you're teaching people how to do that. And you're doing it from a place of your own experience and your own story. And I think this is a podcast for educators, but we know that educators live lives behind closed doors that may or may not be mm-hmm. what we see on the outside. We also know right. that they serve children who live these lives, which are also perhaps not, quote, perfect or, quote, normal. And so I would just love to hear a little bit more about, I mean, we know that individuals who experience trauma kind of create these methods of survival, and they mm-hmm. don't often serve them later in life. We can call them shields, we can call them masks, we can call mm-hmm. them whatever you want to call them. Perhaps you have a different name for them. But I'd love to talk about sort of the negative narratives and how damaging those labels can be in terms of manifesting the lives that we want for the future, like how those get in the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they definitely sneak in. And since your show addresses so many educators can perpetuate this problem. So for your listeners that call somebody a problem child or a problem student, or, you know, the one that just can't get it right. Because when you think of back in the olden days, remember, if you raised your hand and you got it wrong, they would put you in the corner or give you the dunce cap or just do things that were basically shaming you in public. That does not solve anything. It perpetuates it. When what we really need is kindness and to call these kids to greatness, because as an educator, you may be the only person that shines a light into that child's life. And research has shown that if children do not have at least one adult that they can emotionally bond with, and that person is safe for them, that they grow up with a ton of dysfunction. So for myself, I didn't have people in my life that were safe. And there was a few teachers that were kind to me, and I loved learning. Thankfully, I wasn't, quote, the problem student. But even in that arena, I didn't have a teacher that I could go and confide to say something's not right at home. Mm-hmm. And we need to really, as a culture, as a society, start creating safe places for people, whether it's our neighbor or it's the neighbor's kids, or while we're in the workplace, if you're an educator, not just be pigeonholed into the role that you play or the title on your business card, but be safe, because nobody knew that there was something wrong with me. Nobody knew this story. And you know, things that I talked about in the book, like, oh, I was a model. I was on the cover of a magazine. I was a swimwear model, all this stuff. Everybody thought I was fine and living the dream, right? Because that's what it looks like. We want the Hollywood live the dream life. And I was a wreck and falling apart inside.
Wow. So, wow. And I know in the book you said that even into your married life that people would reference your family as this Barbie and Ken, like three kids, perfect family. And the reality was that inside you were, like you said, you were kind of shattered. And I think that this is a really common theme. And social media, I mean, social media is a wonderful tool, but it's like an accelerator and it's an amplifier. And I think if you're feeling low, those other people's kind of high highs don't always reflect that reality, right, of what's going on. And I think we see a lot of that right now. We see people's highlight reel and we don't necessarily tune into the reality of what is actually happening in their lives. And I think in many respects, it's easier to hide now because people are only seeing these highlights. What's your take on that and sort of exacerbating that mask problem?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is an amplifier. I would say for when you're low and you know that you're low, you need to be able to be very proactive in what inputs you're going to allow into your mind. So if you are following people that you think live kind of a fake lifestyle, like the Kardashians, believe me, behind closed doors, they fight and throw things and have their problems, right? They're not any different. But if the only thing that you see to counterbalance that is champagne and fur coats and red carpets, like you're just seeing extremes. Those are not normal extremes for most people that are on social media looking for something to either entertain them or make them feel better or educate them or whatever it is. So be very mindful of who you follow. I don't follow anybody that's extreme with any point of views, like religious, political, or anything. And I don't put that kind of content out there because I want to make sure that I'm really shining a light, whether somebody has the same belief system as I do, say religiously and politically. So you just need to really guard yourself in that way of what your inputs are. And you need to be mindful and know yourself and know, hey, I'm getting overstimulated and I need to stop and breathe, or maybe I need to go for a walk, or I need to play with my kids, or you know what? Gosh darn it, break out a coloring book because that will calm you right down. It's really therapeutic.
Totally.
It's really therapeutic. But yeah, those masks and things that we fall into, they are patterns because it's so easy to tune into that stuff and numb out. And 3 hours later, you're still scrolling on Instagram. You still feel pretty yucky and you have not done anything to take action to improve your life. So one of the things that I tell the clients that I work with is you need to program your phone. Everybody now has a smartphone, right? So most of us use it as an alarm clock in the morning. When it goes off, make sure that right after that, you get the little pop-up reminder that says, what are you choosing to believe today? And start your day off by setting that intention of what am I going to believe today? And I really like for you to choose what you're going to believe about yourself today. And start in with some positive self-talk. I'm going to do my best. You know, I'm going to show up and maybe even think about how you want to do that. Because if you just get on your phone when you wake up and you start scrolling while you're waiting for your coffee maker, you're already starting your day where you're getting sucked into all this other stuff that most people do not have the self-discipline to stop looking at. You know, I don't know what it is with people that want to see why celebrities have this perfect life. I'm like, you guys, don't.
That's so awesome. That is like phenomenal advice though, because I've heard Tim Ferriss say, don't open your email until you've set your own intentions for the day, because as soon as you do, you're then fulfilling someone else's to-do list. And then the other piece is Arianna Huffington says, don't even look at your phone at all in the first, 10, 15 minutes of the morning. And she says, in fact, don't even keep it in your room because it's such an intense magnet. So I love that. Yeah. Sharon, that's so unique. I've never heard anybody, and I've had over 100 interviews now, I've never heard anybody say, set an intention as a reminder on your phone. What a great idea. I think that's simple. I think it's easy and it's super actionable. And I think it's like, sometimes we just need things written down, right?
You do. And thank you for that compliment. And I think, you know, if you're going to have your phone, make it work for you.
Yes. Like,
there's so many apps that you can add to your phone that will remind you to stop and breathe or to take a moment and meditate. If you practice a faith, maybe you have one that sends you a verse to think about each day. Make that thing, you're paying for it, right? Like mine's right here next to me and I know you can see me. I'm like, make that thing work for you. What we spend so much money on our phones, but take it another step. Have that thing go off in the middle of the day and remind you again, are you staying on track where you need to be? Like, do you like how you feel right now? Because if you don't like how you feel right now, you can be so proactive and take a deep breath and go, okay, what is not working for me right now? And just like stop and reset and then do it again at night. And just before you go to bed, of just like, you know, getting your mind right and clear and calm so that you can function at a higher level.
Love that. I just love that. Before we kind of delve into that a little bit more, I'd like to talk about this whole concept of perfectionism, because I think for many of us, I mean, you alluded to the fact that there is the quote problem child, but quite often kids who have been through hard times, and I count myself as one of those, and I know that you were a high achiever too, we often tend to be those achievers. We want to people please. We have, you know, as Oprah says, the disease to please. And it can really work against us. I love Elizabeth Gilbert, her book, Big Magic. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but she's just, she's incredible, right? And she talks about, perfectionism being this haute couture version of fear that kind of tricks us into sort of believing that we need it around, but that truly it just cuts us off at the knees. And so what's your take on perfectionism? And what would you say to someone, say like me or a listener, an educator who feels like they're sort of in the throes of that cycle, to sort of beam out of that mindset?
Boy, yes, I love me a good day of perfectionism. You know, I think we need to get back to just giving ourselves permission to be human and to make mistakes and really take a step back of how would you talk to your best friend if they dropped the ball or they made a mistake? You know, would you be blaming and shaming? Because people that are in perfectionism, that's what we do. We start doing this whole self-talk of, why did you do that? Oh my gosh, you completely screwed that up and everybody's going to know what you did and yada, yada, yada. And then we try to overcompensate to try to cover up what we did. And it makes us physically sick just from the stress of all that internal self-talk and turmoil. Can we just stop and say, okay, right now, whoever's listening to me, you missed the mark. Okay, so what? I don't know. I don't know what you did. And probably 10 other people that could possibly know what you did are so consumed with their own stuff in their head right now. A lot of them aren't even paying attention to what you did. But we are addicted to this idea that everybody is watching and knows what we're doing, because people like to watch, but they're also like, they've got the attention span of like hamsters, because honestly, everybody's scrolling and they're placing judgment so fast on the information in front of them and moving on to the next thing. They're probably not paying attention to you. So give yourself a break. And then here's the other thing. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Honest to God, write down in your journal where you think that you've missed the mark. Quote, you think you missed the mark. Okay, so what's going to happen? And what would happen if you just let it go? So right now, just take a deep breath and go, okay, I'm just going to let it go. I did the best that I could today. I'm not perfect. I'm human. And I'm just going to let it go, because tomorrow's a new day. There you go.
Beautiful.
And like sit with it for a second, right?
That's great. I love that. And I think more of us need to speak to ourselves that way. I think, yes. You know, honestly, yes. Educators are just so notorious for being perfectionists. It's tough for us to really delve right into true, you know, learning when we're in that mode because we want to present as perfect. But I think the reality is that we serve our children so much better if we're willing to make the mistakes and to try new things and to take risks. And doing that really requires you to step away from that perfectionist mindset, right? So no, I really think that's great.
I love what you just said because children are desperate to be around authentic adults that allow you to make mistakes. This is the thing. If we don't allow kids to make mistakes because we're so caught up in everything being perfect, how are we supposed to turn them into productive human beings that go out into the world? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we don't allow them to learn from their mistakes. And then we get into like this blame and shame when there is a mistake. That's just, making mistakes is part of the human process. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We've lost our vision around learning as we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. I think there are times when it can really feel that way, for sure, for sure. I want to talk a little bit about that. What do you wish that as a child, that maybe someone had said to you, that would have helped you to reframe your sense of self? At the time, you know, whether you were 7 or 11 or 14 or 17, even for that matter.
Oh my gosh, how much time do we have? Because there's like a book's worth right there. But, you know, I think especially for educators or parents that might be listening that have children and they're just kind of like, what do I say to this? What do I say to somebody that I know doesn't think they're enough? Literally, you need to look at them and tell them that they're enough. Whether you say those three words, you are enough, or you say it in other ways by looking them in the eye, using their name, you know. Okay, so on that note, looking people in the eye and using their name, I went to a conference several years ago and Colin Powell was speaking about looking people in the eye, about his time at the Pentagon when he would go down into the park. There's a parking structure underneath and they had valets that would park their car. And one of the valets said to him, you know, Mr. Powell, you know, what can I do for you? And I can't remember the guy's name. I'll say Jimmy. He looked him in the eye and said, nothing, Jimmy. I just came down here to take a walk. And he just kept looking him in the eye and said, how's your family? How are you? And I'll tell you, that man, when he walked in the room, he commanded such a presence, such a grace, such a compassion that I was in a very big room. You felt his presence. Like there, I was sitting with thousands of people. You felt that man's presence. Mm. It's not possible for all of us to do that big of a scale. Mm-hmm. But what you can do moment by moment to look somebody in the eye and call them by name and treat them with kindness and respect and stop assigning meaning to what you think might be going on with this individual. Mm-hmm. Because basically, if you haven't asked the questions and really gotten them to reveal what's going on, you're making up stories about what you think about that kid or neighbor or coworker.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, absolutely.
That's all you're running on. And you have the ability to just show up and be kind and compassionate and be present. That's what will shift somebody else's life. So had somebody when I was a child, even teenage years, treated me as if I was of value, I think that would have shifted to some degree for me. But I had so much trauma and chaos going on, I don't know how much it could have affected me.
Mm-hmm. Just because you were basically on a flotation device, just surviving, right?
I was just trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My. Yeah. No, such good advice. You know, I think and maybe give me your take on this, but I think often when you have been through such difficult times, it gives you this bird's eye view about the world, and it gives you an inside scoop into, well, basically gives you empathy for those who are also struggling. How do you think that your background has impacted the way that you connect with others in such an authentic way, and your desire actually to teach and serve them as well?
You know, it's funny. I was having this conversation with my kids over the holidays. We always play this game, like, would you rather? And they give me like things to pick from that nobody wants to pick from. And it's always so interesting because it is this game that they've played ever since they were little kids. But it was kind of like, Mom, would you rather go back and fix things in your past to create a new future? Or would you rather go into the future knowing, you know, and they come up with this thing. So this conversation led into the whole deal. And I was like, well, first I said, I would like to go back and change things. And then they said to me, the wisdom of teenage boys, but then Mom, you wouldn't have us and you wouldn't be doing what you're doing and you wouldn't know all the things that you know. Hmm. And I said, darn it. Okay. Okay. I mean, we all live with things in our past where we're like, ooh, if I could have just fixed that or taken a different direction. But now, and I've said this several times over the last couple of years, and it really is true, even though I have my moments of saying, I wish I could change things in my past because they were so difficult to overcome. Now I know beyond a shadow of a doubt, this was my path and this was my calling. Mm. That I would overcome those things and get to this place where I could share truths and steps for other people to take to know that they're going to be okay, because there's just not enough of that. And there's so many people that have been through far worse than I have that have remained silent. And we need those people to share their stories. We need to learn from others so that we can heal ourselves and make change in the world, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about rewriting that story. Time is really zipping along. I cannot believe how how easy and quick this conversation is, actually. I'd like to sort of touch on some of those elements of really that you highlight in the book. You have your three-step process, which is really about, mm-hmm. my understanding of it is choosing a different outcome. And then what do you believe will change that life? And then who would you be if you could be anyone? And sort of stepping into your own potential, your own vision for yourself, and doing that through a number of different, you know, strategies and visioning approaches. Would you mm-hmm. speak to those steps a little bit and maybe give us a few tidbits so that listeners can perhaps get started on their own journey?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one, you have to understand that you really have the superhero type of power, which is your choice. Because if you're not going to believe that you have the power of choice, then we can't even go any further. Right now, if you are listening to the show, you have the power to choose, right? Just think about it. You chose your sandwich. You probably chose the clothes that you're wearing. You chose to turn on the show. I know that's silly and oversimplified, but people will sit back and go, well, I have no choice in the matter. But you do, and you need to take your power back. You need to recognize that you've just slipped into patterns of giving up your power. So first, take your power back and decide that you're going to start choosing you and making values-based decisions for yourself. So we probably don't have time to go into values-based decisions, but it's in the book, and I love to talk about that. It's a great training. The second thing is you have to decide really what is it that you're believing about yourself. So every person has something right now that they go, I would do, quote, fill in the blank, if only I wasn't, and then fill in that blank. And I've used this not just in coaching, but I used that in corporate training, and it shocked me. I had people start crying. When I would ask them, you know, what is it that you're believing about yourself? They started getting kind of intense. But when you take that question to the next level and I asked, who would you be if you stopped believing that, whatever your thing is? I had somebody tell me after that they were calling their parents that they hadn't spoke to in 10 years. And just like the stories go on and on. But that is so powerful. What are you believing about yourself right now? Ask yourself if it's true. Sometimes you don't know if it's true and you have to do a little bit of work. But if you know what you're believing, and my thing that I wrote about in the book was, I believe that I just was worthless. Mm-hmm. And then if I say, okay, well, if I stopped believing that, who would I be?
Wow.
And write down who would you be if you stopped believing something that's held you really in an emotional prison all your life. Hmm. So for teachers, maybe you have kids where their parents are at home telling them they're stupid. They come to school, they're good students, but you know they're struggling. You see their potential in them, but they're believing that they're stupid and they're incapable. So teachers, do this experiment in your classroom. This is the most powerful thing I think that we can do for the people in our lives around us, is ask them, what do you believe about yourself? Go ahead and ask them if it's true. Some of them may think that the lies they believe is true, but just go right into the next question of, who would you be if you stopped believing that thing? And you're going to have these kids that are going to be like, oh my gosh, I would be acing my test. Maybe they're going to, you know, if you're dealing with little kids, they might be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be an astronaut, you know, or whatever it is. You know, we need to be childlike again and let ourselves play with the idea of who we could be.
Love it.
And stop being stuck.
Yes. And I think, yes, absolutely. And I think within that is actually this infinite ability to actually go where we want to be, especially in this world right now where we can pick ourselves. We can be, mm-hmm. we can be on our own TV show. We can, you know, we're both doing our own podcasts. You're doing one as well. And you did that because you decided to, just like I did. And I think mm-hmm. there's so much power to that. And I think, you know, 10, 20 years ago, that just would not have been possible in the same way. And so we're right. able to do those things in a much more tangible way than perhaps what only affirmations might have been able to gain us in the past. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. there is this true mm-hmm. element of take life by the horns. You want to be that, then you create it. You want to be an actor, mm-hmm. start something on YouTube and make it remarkable. And maybe mm-hmm. someone will notice, you know, like any, whatever it is. Right. And I think there's something so encouraging about that and exciting. Mm-hmm. As we sort of just about wrap up, cause I want to be mindful of your time. What is in the future for you, Sharon, and how do you see your next steps, and what do you see sort of serving the world looking like for you?
Well, serving the world, it really looks like getting this whole message out that's in the book, The Girl in the Garage, 3 Steps to Letting Go of Your Past. It is really bringing that to everybody that I possibly can, especially I have such a passion for women that have suffered abuse or trauma, and a lot of women just flat out have self-worth issues that grew up in normal homes. I hate to say normal after we talk mm-hmm. so much about what's normal and what's not, but
typical. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I had a client come to me and say, I had great parents, but I feel like I'm not enough. Mm. And we need to get to the root of, well, why is that? And part of that is protecting those inputs. So it is getting the messaging out that you are enough. And just growing, for me, growing as a speaker and getting in front of more audiences to share the messaging that you're enough and that really anything is possible for you.
Love it. I think you're doing a great job and certainly you have a great platform to do it. So good for you.
Thank you.
So while, you know, we're sort of at the end of our conversation, is there anything that you want to add before we zip to those rapid fire questions?
I can't think of anything, but okay. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. So first question, in just a few words or less, what does kindness mean to you?
You know, I think that kindness means just giving the other person the benefit of the doubt. Mm.
What yeah. one skill or superpower would an educator need to lead with in order to be effective?
You know, I think kindness. Mm. Just being kind and listening. Yeah.
And finally, what one message or quote would you print on one of those quote cups that could be sold in bookstores around the world?
Oh, this is a good one. Believing a lie is just as powerful as believing the truth.
Ooh, that's good. Is that you? Did you make that up?
Yeah,
Yeah, that's
it's
a good one. I'm sure I read it, but that's a, can you say it again?
Believing a lie is just as powerful as believing the truth.
Amen to that. Sharon Hughes, what a delight to have you on the show. I'm so excited. I'm hoping we get to connect again, maybe even in real life one day. And thank you for taking the time to be here today.
Oh, thank you. It was such a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. And where can people find you online and otherwise?
You can find me at sharonhughes.net or thegirlinthegaragebook.com. And if you're interested in the book, it's everywhere. It's Amazon, Target.com, Walmart.com, BarnesandNoble.com, all those.
Perfect. And then also on social media, right?
Right. If you are on Instagram, you'll find me at Sharon Hughes Official.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you so much. This has been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for the wonderful reviews that you've left for this podcast on iTunes. Your reviews make a big difference in helping other educators find this show. If you think that I'm doing good work here and you'd like others to get inspired and join our 21-day kindness challenge and movement, I'd love it if you would take a minute, head over to iTunes, and leave a review. Thank you so much. This has been another episode of Kindsight 101, the podcast. For links to resources mentioned in this episode, visit smallactbigimpact.com and click on our podcast and choose this episode number. Now, I'd love to give my audience a heads up about my new book, which will provide ideas, actionable strategies, and inquiry-based approaches to creating kinder classroom through serving the community. Subscribe to my blog for more information. Now, I would love to hear from you. What's the biggest insight that you gain from this conversation? Head over to our website, smallactbigimpact.com, leave a comment on our podcast page, or tag and connect with us on social media with the hashtag smallactbigimpact to share your inspiring story of kindness. Can't wait to hear from you.